Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Liverpool get the ball back and they are in here with Diogo Jota! Well, what a finish that is. It's another lovely ball and another really good run. And Minamino! And Taki Minamino is able to celebrate an opening goal for Liverpool.
So we're on the edge of another season. Promises to be another wild ride. Do Liverpool have it within themselves to win back the Premier League title? And who will shine the brightest over the next 10 months in the squad? As always, our fantastic Liverpool writers at The Athletic will bring you the Red Agenda podcast every week to delve into the biggest talking points today. James Pearce and Simon Hughes join myself, Steve Hothersall. So is this going to be a season to remember? James, you've enjoyed those final two pre-season games at Anfield. Has it given you any indication of the season that lies ahead?
Yeah, I think it was certainly the back-to-back games at Anfield to finish things off. I think have to, as a Liverpool fan, fuel a sense of optimism. I think coming away from Anfield last night, I think the thing that struck me was, you know, I think all summer we've kind of been surrounded by that noise of, you know, where are the new signings? Why is Konate the only one that's come in? And then you see Liverpool field two really strong 11s in back-to-back nights, and so many players put their hands up and show that they look in fantastic shape. And I think the thing that struck me as well is I think Liverpool have massively benefited from the fact they've been able to have a proper pre-season. I mean, it was unprecedented for Klopp to be able to take them away for 4 weeks. You know, no commercial side to the tour, you know, no distractions. It was just pure time for him. And so many key players, you know, got a decent break as well. So I still think, you know, I think like a lot of fans, I'd love to see one or two new faces come in before the window shuts. But I think the last few weeks have probably reminded everyone that there is actually an immense amount of talent already at that club.
That's a manager's dream, isn't it? No commercial distractions. You don't hear that on many pre-season tours. Simon, we'll throw the same starting question to you. Do Liverpool have it within themselves? Do they have a good enough squad to go all the way this time?
Well, as James says, I mean, I think it's been a good pre-season. You know, far more encouraging than last pre-season when nearly everything that could go wrong did go wrong. Very disjointed, players unavailable, COVID issues. You know, they didn't have a good time last year. And going into the season, it didn't give a lot of confidence. But I think this pre-season has been the total opposite. I mean, gone from one extreme to the other where, you know, the manager's just been able to focus on football. And I think that gives Liverpool a massive advantage. It's difficult to gauge against sort of how the other pre-seasons have gone at other clubs. So you're expecting that Manchester United, Chelsea, Man City are going to be the clubs that Liverpool are going to be probably competing with for the title. Obviously, they haven't had the time that Klopp has had with his players, it's fair to say. You know, they've had players coming back a bit later than Liverpool. You know, they have been able to sort of increase their squad options more than Liverpool. So there's a bit of a trade-off here. I mean, I'm sure we'll get onto it, but some of Liverpool's younger players look very exciting and, you know, I'd expect them to play a role. My concern at the moment isn't the first few months, really. I think I'd expect Liverpool to start well. And if they do start well, you'd think that momentum will take them through the season. It's just January. You always look towards January. Whenever Liverpool have had a bad season, or when Liverpool's sort of season has unravels, when Jurgen Klopp has been there, I probably should rephrase that, it's always been in January, as it was last season and then many other seasons. So, you know, I suppose a lot depends on the you know, AFCON and whether Salah and Mane are going to be away. If those two players are going to be away, I do think that they're going to need a little bit more in attack to get through that period.
You sounded a bit more tentative than James there. Look, we normally do this at the back end, but give us your top four. We'll start with James. Who's your top four in the Premier League come the end of the season?
It's a tough one, Steve. I think, you know, as Simon said, the problem is at the moment, there's so many unknowns, isn't there, in terms of, I don't think we really know just how strong the competition is going to be. I think you have to have Man City as favourites. I think you'd be pretty blinkered to think that to predict with any great confidence that this Liverpool team are stronger than this City team, especially if City still go on and get Kane before the window shuts. So I think if I was doing it off the top of my head today, I'd probably go City 1, Liverpool 2, Chelsea 3, United 4th.
Okay, Si?
I'd actually put Chelsea favourites this season. They just won the Champions League. I think they've got a very good squad and they've added to it. Obviously, Lukaku's going there. You would argue last season that was the sort of the element of the team that they really missed, that focal point in attack. So I'd say Chelsea for me are just ahead of City. And then, I mean, Manchester United have obviously bought two excellent players, Sancho and Varane, I would think are going to definitely improve Man United. My concern for United remains in the centre of midfield. I don't think the sort of the balance is still quite right there. Maybe balance is the wrong word, just the level of quality. I'm just not sure whether the balance across the team is quite there. So that for me puts Liverpool just ahead of United. I think Liverpool would have finished ahead of United last season, had Van Dijk being fit all season. There's no doubt about that for me. So I'd say in that order at the moment, top four. That could change over the course of the next few weeks, depending on whether United get somebody in the middle of the park. It doesn't look like they're going to try. I haven't seen any reports of that. But I just think it goes back to what I said before. I think Liverpool needs another forward player just to make sure that in that January period, they've got a player who's used to what Jurgen Klopp demands and is ready to play in that period, because it's such a tough period, January. Even when Liverpool sort of, the season when they won the league, it was still hard, you know. So if you don't get that right, that's where it can all unravel very quickly for any team.
So you're both saying it would be a big ask for Liverpool to win the Premier League, but not impossible. Now, on that front, maybe it's the extra signings, as you're saying, Simon, and it's also that bit of luck with injuries. Already, we've got an issue. Andy Robertson, he's confirmed he's got some ligament damage. He's probably going to be out to what after the international break. James, you broke this story. It didn't look good, did it? If you watch it in slow motion, the way he went over on his ankle against Athletic Bilbao.
No, and I think that's why Klopp was right when he said after the game against Osasuna that they feel like they got lucky with the verdict from the scan results, because it did look horrible. And I know initially there were some fears about a fracture. So the fact that it's only minor ligament damage, and I was told that they're looking at weeks rather than months, I think has to be regarded as positive. I think he'll miss, pretty much guaranteed, that those first three games before the international break, and then I'm sure he'll be doing everything he possibly can to be fit for just after. So I think, yeah, of course, it's a setback. I think, you know, Robertson hasn't missed a Premier League game since, I think it was just after football restarted, after the first lockdown at Goodison in June 2020. But what I would say, in a pre-season when a host of players on the fringes of the squad have really put their hand up and staked a claim, you know, near the top of the list, you would have Kostas Tsimikas, because after a pretty torrid first season at Liverpool, when there was all kinds of mitigating circumstances for that, from catching COVID early on to thigh and knee injuries to trying to get his head around what Klopp wanted from him tactically. Only 6 minutes of Premier League football to his name last season, but he looks a different player this time around. And I don't. It's not an area I'm really concerned about going into Saturday. I think, probably Klopp's probably got some big decisions to make for the starting lineup at Norwich in other areas of the team. But I think he'd be pretty confident that Tsimikas is now up to speed and ready to fill that void.
Yeah, he looked terrific against Osasuna. Wonderful link-up play with Roberto Firmino. Some of his crossing, James, was just exceptional. The sort of stuff that if you're a centre-forward in the box, that's what you're after.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest compliment you could pay him is probably that it was Robertson-esque, the way in which he rampaged forward and, yeah, he whipped in some really quality deliveries. I mean, the goal that he created for Firmino was just brilliantly worked, wasn't it? You know, the 1-2 he played with Minamino and then, a striker's dream, that ball in towards the near post. There was another ball he played, I think it was early in the second half, for Minamino over the top with the outside of his boot, which was, it was absolutely, had 40-odd thousand inside Anfield purring. It was that good. I think if there is any remaining question marks, it's probably a little bit defensively. I just think when we've seen players fill in at left back previously, of course, James Milner, when he's played there, you always feel as if Liverpool can't quite be the same force that you'd want them to be because they rely so much on their fullbacks to attack. And I think the great thing going into the start of the season is despite no Robertson, Liverpool do have a left back there who can give them a lot of the things that they're used to having from their left back.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I was just thinking on Andy Robertson's side. I know James mentioned, he barely misses a match, does he? But you never, ever see him leave the field either. You never see him stay down injured. That's why it was so almost bizarre to see him go off with that sort of injury.
Well, I think the only time that's happened previously was Barcelona, wasn't it? When he tried to carry on and it was quite clear that he was going to be unable to, I think. It was unusual. And just to touch on what James said there, I think obviously Andy Robertson gets a huge amount of praise for sort of his role in the Liverpool team and his developments. But I sometimes think, I think it's almost underestimated just how difficult it is to come in and pretty much replicate what he does. It's not just from an attacking sense, it's his defensive capabilities as well. Very little gets past him. So as much as he's going to be judged by Tsimikas is going to be judged by what he does going forward, if there's any defensive weakness, we've seen in the past how teams try and look for any chink of light against Liverpool. They tried to lay a bit on Trent in the past, and I think he's very good defensively. I think it's a bit of a misconception and it's also something that maybe dates back to when he was 18, really. I think he's improved a lot in that side of his game. But if he does have some sort of defensive weaknesses, I think over a couple of weeks that'll probably get pinpointed by other teams. Liverpool have got some strong opposition coming in, Chelsea at the end of the month and into September when the Champions League game starts as well. So it'll be interesting to see how he deals with that. But I was encouraged by what I saw because we haven't got much to base it against, have we, after last season? My sort of view on him is based on what he did for Olympiacos in a game against Wolves at the moment when he looked really, really exciting going forward. But yeah, I mean, he needs to step up. Otherwise, there was no point in spending all that money on him. He looked to me to have the physique of a Premier League player and the athleticism of a Premier League player. So, so we'll see. But I just think that you know, it's going to be a big step up for him. But you know, the first two games are probably the two shorter games that you'd want in terms of, you know, I don't want to dismiss sort of the abilities of the opponents, but obviously Norwich, they're not as in good, even as they've obviously let a couple of, or they certainly let one of their best players leave over the course of the summer. If you're choosing an away tie, you probably want Norwich, wouldn't you, if we're being totally honest, in the Premier League. And then Burnley at home, I mean, I think Liverpool will want to put a lot of things right from the wrongs of last season against them as well. So first home game in front of Anfield. So he'll get lots of support in that as well, the left back, I think. So, yeah, fascinated to see how he does, because it's a massive step up. And Andy Robertson, for me now, you know, I think there's only maybe what he's in keeping with the top two or three, four left backs in the world, without a doubt.
Absolutely. And they do start, of course, against Norwich, the team they started against 2 years ago when they won 4-0 and went on to win the title, of course. Talking about physiques, what about Ibrahima Konate, James? And what? I mean, I can't believe he's 22 years old, this lad. And without going too far, he just looks almost so composed on the ball. He's got a bit of Van Dijk in him, hasn't he? The way he sort of saunters forward with it, lays brilliant passes off, starts moves. And then at moments in the game against Osasuna, you saw him up in the opposition penalty area, almost begging the question, is he going to be a goal-scoring centre-half as well?
Yeah, I think every time I see him play in pre-season, you just see more and more of why he was the priority for Liverpool this summer. I think he just looks every inch a Liverpool centre-half, doesn't he, in terms of what we know that Klopp and his staff look for in terms of, you know, yes, stature and strength and power, but also, you know, that recovery speed, which is so important when you're playing a high defensive line. And as you know, there was a great moment, wasn't it? I think it was early in the second half when I think the ball initially got away from him, but you know, through a mixture of skill and perseverance and strength, he got it back and ended up doing about three or four pirouettes to get himself out of a spot of bother. So yeah, I think massively helpful for him being able to have like a really proper pre-season and also that intensive time away where, you know, I'm sure he does feel like one of the group now. And, you know, we know it's a very welcoming environment for new players. And then, you know, I think you can see that both on and off the pitch, he's slotted in very quickly. And it's going to be fascinating to see what combination Klopp goes with on Saturday against Norwich, because I've always been convinced during pre-season that when the serious stuff started, we'd see Konate and Matip as the centre-back combination, because I just thought, you know, it was going to come too soon for Van Dijk. But then obviously you see Van Dijk play, 70-odd minutes, I think he played against Bilbao on Sunday. So, you know, I think it's a difficult one to call at the moment, whether, you know, is it Van Dijk and Matip or is it Konate and Matip? You know, you'd have to say Joe Gomez played incredibly well against Osasuna as well. So it's, yeah, when you think that was an area of such concern a few months into last season, now, you know, it's almost an embarrassment of riches for Klopp at centre-half. And it's going to be intriguing to see who gets the chance to get the serious stuff underway.
Maybe it wouldn't be a surprise to see Virgil van Dijk. I was doing LFC TV last night and Jan Molby was saying, well, actually, if you're Virgil, you need some proper minutes under your belt. I mean, how else can you, you know, there's no point in just going through training all the time. So maybe the manager's got the mindset of, well, you know, give him as much time as possible in a proper Premier League game from the start of the campaign.
Yeah, that may well be the case. I think it's just that tricky one, isn't it? In terms of, I still feel there is a difference between friendly stuff and, you know, and the heat of Premier League battle. It is a step up, and you know, has he got enough football under his belt to start on Saturday, considering what was he out for 10 months? But you're right. The thing is then that, you know, does he really, then you're in the realms of, well, we know that Liverpool are a stronger team with Virgil van Dijk in it. And it, does he really need another week? Is another week going to make that much difference? And also, you could also make an argument that even if Van Dijk's only running at 75, 80%, that still makes him head and shoulders above most other fellow centre-backs. So, he's got some big decisions to make, Klopp, but they're nice decisions, aren't they? I think even when you look at the, I think you'd be a brave man to try and get right the balance of the midfield for Saturday, because, I think Fabinho has to come in, doesn't he? Having, yes, he came back from pre-season late due to Brazil duties, but, I think he has to play. Keita, you'd have to say, has to start, having had a really good pre-season. And then, will it be James Milner? I think probably Saturday will come too soon for Henderson or Thiago, as good as it was to see them make their first outings of pre-season on Monday night. Or rather than Milner, will he go the other way and play Harvey Elliott, who I'm sure we'll come on to who have been the stars of pre-season, Steve, but I think you definitely have Harvey Elliott right up there.
I think it's great the way all of a sudden, and you mentioned it at the start, and Si, we two pre-season games back-to-back, and it was very much build, I think, after everyone saw the lineup on Sunday, that was almost the A team and Monday would be the B team. But I think Monday's game sort of completely confounded that, because I think that's just thrown up loads of questions, Si, hasn't it, as to who should actually start at the weekend. A great example being Jota scoring on Sunday, and then Firmino's clearly got the bit between his teeth, and the way he scored and celebrated shows that he's not giving his place up.
When I saw the team on Sunday, I was at the game against Bilbao on Sunday, and I thought that team selection was his, obviously, first choice goalkeeper, defence and forward line, with the question marks more around the midfield. Obviously, the standout player in the game against Bilbao was Harvey Elliott. And I mean, I know I've spoken to a few people at Blackburn when he was there, and they just said, sort of how talented he was, but just how professionally he was as well, and how dedicated, be the first one in, last one out, training, willing to learn, mucked in with the sort of senior players there. The senior players sort of respected his sort of dedication in training. He certainly wasn't, sort of somebody who thought, well, I'm from Liverpool, I can just stroll in here and get into the team. He worked hard when he was there to prove himself to everybody. I think that's always a good sign if you're whichever club you play for, particularly for Liverpool, under Jurgen Klopp. It was a really encouraging performance from him. I mean, 18 years old, he was just always looking to try and make something happen. Reminded me a little bit, sort of if Shaqiri, when he first came in, I'm not sure whether Shaqiri is able to do that anymore. He's a different stage of his career now, but always looking to try and do something, get a shot away, make that killer pass. I mean, the pass that he put through to Salah, where Salah just about he couldn't score. It was a sublime pass. So clearly, Jurgen Klopp sees him as a player who could play a number of positions as well, which I think is very, very important for Liverpool. Play anywhere across the front line, I suspect, off the right mainly, and then in midfield as well, to more towards the left of midfield. So very, very, very good defensively as well. Actually, that was another thing that really impressed me. He got back into position and gave his left back cover. Although, actually, I think Bilbao did get a fair amount of joy down that side. It wasn't necessarily down to the fact that Robertson wasn't getting the cover that he needed. I think it was more down to actually Robertson and Van Dijk being a bit behind, in terms of the game time. I think that Liverpool do have a much bigger squad than I think people realise, but I do think that they need to let one or two of those players go. I think Shaqiri is going to be the first one, possibly Origi as well. I think Origi as well for me. And as I say, if they get rid of those two players, I think there should, in theory, be the room to go and get, the sort of player that can make the difference at the top end of the pitch. When, as I've said before, Salah and Mane aren't going to be available halfway through the season.
A player who I wouldn't get rid of now, and I think I think he's done enough, is Takumi Minamino, James. And I looked at his performance against Osasuna. I just thought he just adds a different dimension. Maybe it's just taken him much longer to settle in, to understand the club, understand his you know, what he should be doing within the side. But there's a player there, isn't there, that can add something to that Liverpool squad?
Yeah, 100%. And especially, I think, in a season, as Simon touched on earlier, when you know you're going to be losing Salah and Mane to the Africa Cup of Nations for potentially a month, that, you know, depth in that department is going to be absolutely key. And I think we've seen some really important steps forward from Minamino. I felt sorry for him actually in his first kind of year at the club, because I think that the timing was so tough for him, wasn't it? You know, he literally arrived in a new country, new language, new culture, new style of play. And then, you know, what was it, within, it could only have been 7 or 8 weeks we're in lockdown. You know, he's, you know, and he was living over here on his own. You know, and I know that the club did everything they possibly could to help him out and make sure he didn't feel isolated. But that's tough at a time when, you know, you're trying to settle in a new city. And then, of course, you know he struggled to force his way in. He didn't get the game time. He went out on loan. And I always thought, if, you know, I wondered whether we'd seen the last of him when he went on loan to Southampton. And I thought, you know, that would have been tough for him, I think, because I think if that was the end of his Liverpool career, I think quite rightly he would have thought, you know, I never really got the chance to show what I could do. You know, the cards were just stacked against him. So I like the fact that, you know, probably I'd say also there's an element of there weren't any suitable bids on the table. And I think clearly he came back this summer in the mood to prove to Klopp he should be part of his plans this season. And I think he's achieved that. I don't see him being a regular starter. I think that's, you know, it's just not realistic when you look at the calibre of the players he's trying to force his way ahead of. But, you know, he could be a really, really, really useful squad player.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman. This is what we've got planned for you across the Athletic Podcast Network this season. The Ornstein and Chapman podcast has been rebranded as the Athletic Football Podcast. We'll release 4 episodes across the week as our journalists bring you the very best insight into the biggest stories in football and the business of sport. Michael Cox will continue to bring you the smartest analysis of all the big games in the Athletic Football Tactics podcast. Adam Hurry will now host 2 episodes of the Football Clichés podcast every single week with his usual take on the game. There's a brand new Athletic FPL podcast with our fantasy football expert, the FPL General, giving you all the advice you need to stay ahead of your mates and top of the FPL rankings. And the Athletic Podcast Network is also home now to a host of club-specific shows, some of which are going to be releasing multiple episodes every week. And we're now your destination, don't forget, for the Totally Football Show with James Richardson and the Totally Football League Show. And that is it. And then we can't fit any more in. All you've got to do is search for The Athletic in your podcast provider of choice or go to our podcast section on the Athletic app. Not surprisingly, with all of the stuff that I've just mentioned, The Athletic is now the world's biggest football podcast network.
You look at the signings that the other teams have made, and Simon, you said before you thought Chelsea might be contenders for the title. So Chelsea signing Romelu Lukaku, United spending on Sancho, City securing Grealish and maybe Kane, but maybe Liverpool not keeping up with the Joneses. Does it necessarily matter? When they won the Champions League, they didn't sign anyone big, went on to win the Premier League. Is it a different kettle of fish now?
Well, it does matter because obviously the players that they have are older now. So it's not just about this season, it's about future seasons as well. You know, they have to think about that and how, well, I'm sure they are thinking about that. You know, that obviously when Liverpool sign a player, they don't do sort of short-term options really. It's always with a long-term view with the confidence that that player is going to be a success. So, you know, it takes, as I mentioned before, it takes time for any player to sort of adjust to what Jurgen Klopp's demands are as well. So, whereas obviously they didn't sign anybody after the Champions League, I still actually think, you know, I know they won the league the following season, but I think that was a little bit of a mistake by Liverpool, you know, in terms of, I know you can't sort of foresee what's going to happen 18 months later, but, you know, it was quite clear ultimately that they were going to sell, you know, they were willing to sell Dejan Lovren that summer, for example. He was up for sale. They didn't quite get the offer that they wanted for him. I think if they get the offer that they want for him at that time, they then get in another centre-half, which then sort of potentially might ease some of the problems that they eventually had, if this makes sense. I know there's a lot of things that happen in the meantime, but I just think when you've just won the Champions League, your stock is never higher. So I was surprised at the time when they didn't buy anybody that summer. I don't think you can always necessarily judge yourself against what the opposition are doing. It's always about what's right for you, really. I'm sure this comes onto the conversation that, you know, about contracts and stuff like that, you know, with Alisson Becker and Fabinho signing new contracts. I think people are a little bit sort of cynical now of when Liverpool agree terms with players that they're own players. You know, what does it really count for? Well, I think it is different this time, because if you look at, say, when Coutinho renewed his contract and went his age at the time, he was 24, signed a five-year contract, which would have took him to when he was 29. And then obviously, you know, quite soon he left. The same situation with Suarez a few years earlier. I think he was 26 when he signed a new five-year contract in December 2013, and then left the following summer. The players that Liverpool have just signed contracts with, in terms of Alisson Becker and Fabinho, basically those players are committing their, you know, their most experienced, in theory, best years to Liverpool now. So it's not like they're going to lose. When they lose that player, their best years are going to be behind them, essentially, now. So I think it is different in that sense. I think that if you're signing players to new contracts at the age of 27, 28, that's always a positive thing. So for Liverpool, you know, that's really, really important that those players are staying, that they're keeping the players for the best years. I mean, you can argue either way about Wijnaldum, whether Liverpool were right to let him go. I think Jordan Henderson's a different discussion, because, I mean, I'm far from one to sort of support the club's stance on everything, I've got to be honest, but particularly on this issue. I mean, Henderson's contract runs out when he's 33 at the moment. So, you know, Liverpool really sort of hold all the cards here, and I can understand why Liverpool would be reluctant to sort of go and pay big money for him at this time, when if he wants to stay and stick around, then, you know, that's going to take him up to the age of 33. They let Steven Gerrard go when he was 34, who's arguably the club's greatest player. I mean, I understand that, you know, skill sets and sort of levels of endurance might be different, but I think the conversation about Henderson is slightly different to Wijnaldum. I think there's more of a reasonable argument actually to have kept Wijnaldum over Henderson at this time. Although, I think Henderson, that is not to say, I think Jordan Henderson has been amazing football for Liverpool. And personally, if it was up to me, I would want him to stay at Liverpool for the rest of his career. But I can understand the club's sort of reluctance to sort of enter the conversation two years before a player ends his deal at the age of 33. Or at least I can understand, I feel that, if Jordan's thinking that they should be prioritising him over somebody like Trent or Alisson Becker or Fabinho, it's understandable that those players are being dealt with more enthusiastically because of their age. It's just as simple as that. Football's a ruthless game, unfortunately. Of course, the key is, from Liverpool, they will be judged on how they replace Jordan Henderson and how what they do from here to negate his eventual departure, because it will come at some point. So they need to see that. They are obviously always looking 2 or 3 years into the future. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what Liverpool do, because they I don't think he's an easy, not just an easy player to replace, but he's not an easy personality to replace as well.
Well, he's not, and he's so huge now, isn't he, James? We saw it when he came out onto the touchline yesterday just swigged some water. It was possibly the reception of the night, wasn't it? You could see how much affection and love there is for the Liverpool skipper.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think, what was that, his first time he'd graced Anfield for, what, 6 months since he limped out of the Merseyside derby and needed groin surgery. So, yeah, fantastic to see him back out there. As Simon said, without wanting to get splitters, I can see it from both sides in terms of, I can understand why Jordan Henderson, after 10 years giving absolutely everything for the club, feels a little bit aggrieved that there isn't a better offer on the table currently. But as Simon said, when a player gets past 30, the reality is you make business decisions where you have to try and take the emotion out of it. And I still hope, he's still only just entered the last 2 years of his deal. So I think, I still hope that something can be sorted out, because, same as Simon, I want to see Jordan Henderson finish his career at Liverpool. I think that's what he wants. And hopefully that agreement can be sorted, because for him, it's not a financial thing. It's more, he wants to feel wanted by the club and feel that they still see him as being really important beyond the age of 33, which certainly I think with the way that he leads his life, I can see him still being an elite midfielder for a few years beyond that. So, positive news on the contract front in the last week with Alisson and Fabinho putting pen to paper. And, I think the next ones clearly will be Virgil and Mo Salah and Sadio in terms of priorities for the club in terms of trying to get these top performers nailed down for the best times of their career.
But why is that a drip feed, James? Is it a PR exercise from the club, or is it simply because it's taking longer with some of those other players?
Yeah, I think it's bound to take longer with some than others. I think I don't think it was any great surprise that Trent was the first one to be announced, because I think Trent, it was a very straightforward negotiation for all parties. So I think it's just the reality is some will take longer than others, but it's probably a bit of an unseen cost as well. I think probably that obviously there's so much focus on net spend and where's the money and all the rest of it. Well, this involves a huge financial commitment, getting these players tied down for the coming years, because of course they all want improved terms, and for these players, especially at the age that a lot of these players are at, they know that this is realistically their last real big contract, especially for those ones that are in their late 20s.
There's so much we could talk about on this podcast. There's literally too much at the moment. Again, I'm going to turn the corner and I'm thinking young players. We saw Cade Gordon, 16 years old. I'm not sure whether youth matters anymore. I mean, how fast is that lad, and how confident and up for the fight as well? But then you just saw a host of other youngsters in the last 2 days brought out by Jurgen Klopp. And you feel that the academy's doing its job and that the future looks bright on that front. So I'm sure there's plenty of those names that we'll pick out in the weeks to come on the Red Agenda. I want to slightly turn a corner, because I know Simon will want to talk about the ticketing system that was introduced and the pictures of the lines of fans down Walton Breck Road. And look, I suppose if anything, Simon, the club had to have these sort of test days where they could iron out the problems. Now, clearly there has been some issues regarding how this new ticketing system works. I don't have it on my phone. I don't understand how it works. I was hearing lots of different stories about how complicated it could be. Hopefully, fingers crossed, they've got this sorted for the start of the season.
Well, I think I said to James yesterday, I mean, part of the problem with Liverpool is they never get stuff right the first time round, do they? With anything, really. I mean, I know it's being very critical, but they get a lot wrong when they try and do something new, telling us how great it's going to be. And it always seems to go wrong at launch. Get it right later, of course, but by then, the appetite for it and the goodwill has been lost. I mean, on Sunday, I was...
What's wrong with the system? What have your sources told you, Si?
Well, people just don't know how to use it first. I mean, I understand that they've had obviously test days and stuff like that. I mean, my personal view is we just, in theory, coming out of a pandemic, making big changes to the way you're getting in the ground at this time. And I just don't necessarily think it's the time to do it. You know, when people are just sort of keen to be returning to normality and then the change in it again. I understand the reasons behind it, but I just feel that, you know, at this time, you know, just make things as simple as possible for people to get in the ground. And I was there on Sunday and I was shocked, to be honest. I mean, I was there on a ticket. I wasn't in the press box. And, you know, it wasn't for a want of, you know, there's a lot of people who were doing what they were asked to do, turning up very early. I was, friend of mine suggested going in the ground 50 minutes before kickoff. And because we were on paper tickets, we were able to get in. Outside the cop, the queue at that point was already going all the way down Walton Breck Road. It was pretty shocking, really. So there was a lot of people already trying to get in the ground, you know, doing as they were told, but the system just wasn't working. So, yeah, I mean, they can't afford for it to happen at a Premier League game, put it that way. The pressure's really, really going to be on because particularly if it's a televised fixture, the first home game against Burnley, I think 12:30 kickoff televised, they can't afford for it to go wrong and delay the kickoff because of the TV money and the TV. The TV aren't going to wait for Liverpool. They'll just kick off. And that will then create a massive storm amongst the fan base. You know, again, reminding the TV comes first and the fans come second. So it's going to be really interesting over the next couple of weeks to see what they do. I just feel, as I said, it was a bit short-sighted to think you've got two home friendly matches to test this on for the first time after people haven't really been inside the ground in those numbers for 18 months. I'm sure they'll get it right eventually, but it's just when, you know, the when is the time right to do it? I know they've had test days and asking people to go down, but you're asking people to go down in their own spare time as well. You know, it's not so easy to do that, particularly in the middle of a pandemic. You know, it's not been easy to do that for people to take, you're asking people to take time off work to go and help the club out, install this thing. I just don't think that's necessarily fair. So they have, for me, this is on the club. The club have to make sure they're making a big change to the way people enter the ground, then they have to make sure that their end is right. Not you know, the fans, there's absolutely no blame attached to the fans on this. They were there in big numbers in good time and it didn't work.
As you say, let's hope it's sorted out. The positive side, obviously, fans being in the stadium, James, it was just brilliant, wasn't it? The goals, the celebrations, the cheers for the manager, just everything.
Yeah. And it didn't, neither game felt like a pre-season friendly, did it, atmosphere wise? I think everyone was just so buzzing to be back inside there after so long. And I think from the quality of the football as well, you could see that the players fed off that energy from the stands, because, you know, Liverpool did play some fantastic stuff. So yeah, I think that's another factor for this season. And we talked about it so many times, didn't we? Just how soulless football behind closed doors was. You know, we understand why the show had to go on, but it wasn't football as we all know it to be. And that's a massive bonus for Liverpool this season as well. You know, there's, you know, at Anfield, you know, I'm very, very confident we'll become a fortress again, which, you know, of course, when the wheels came off in the second half of last season, you know, it was anything but back then when those seats were empty.
Are you at Norwich at the weekend, James?
I hope so. Yeah, yeah. I'm planning to make the trip. I'm just waiting for confirmation in terms of press passes and all the rest of it.
James, you better set off. That's about right, Si, isn't it? If he sets off around now, he might get there for the weekend. Poor lad.
Yeah, no one, James, just driving. Charles, like a 19-year-old.
See what? Didn't see Simon putting his hand up for Norwich.
Oh, you watch Norwich?
That's the one we all want, isn't it? That list of Norwich, Crystal Palace, or West Ham away. Keep them away from yourselves. Look, lads, thank you very much indeed. I hope you've enjoyed the Red Agenda today. Of course, it's back every week. And the Red Agenda Extra. So we'll be doing an extra one each week, which will focus more on a feature. So we're going to delve deep into the academy with Kiva a little bit later on in the week. So check out that podcast when it comes out. Thanks to James Pearce, Simon Hughes. Check out all their wonderful articles on The Athletic. And we'll see you next time on The Red Agenda.